Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. After many years covering the education beat for WNYC, senior reporter Beth Fertig just got a new gig. She'll be covering the courts and legal affairs. And first up on her agenda, immigration courts. It is a turbulent time to be an immigrant, and for that matter, an immigration judge. President Obama has been known as the deporter in chief, and now President-elect Trump has pledged to deport even more people. They already can't keep up with the flow of people brought into immigration court, despite the addition of some additional judges. Here's a judge from Arlington, Virginia, in Beth's first piece, and talking about what's happening even with the addition of additional judges.
That barely keeps up with the incoming cases. It doesn't begin to deal with the more than 500,000 cases that are already pending. If you start doing the 500,000 cases that are pending, then you're going to fall behind on the incoming cases.
With us now is Beth Fertig, our new courts reporter. Hi, Beth.
Hi. I should say that was Paul Wickham Schmidt, who was a longtime judge in the immigration court in Arlington, Virginia, who retired last summer, which was why he was able to speak to me freely, because a lot of them are not able to speak as working judges right now. But they do share that concern.
And I see some of the numbers in your story of the backlog of pending immigration cases, more than 525,000 currently pending?
Yeah, those are cases that are still going through the court or courts around the country. And New York City has the third busiest immigration courts in the country. Just New York City alone, 70,000 pending cases. And
70,000 pending. These are deportation cases per se?
Yeah, but they're for a variety of reasons. You know, they could be people who fell out of status because they came here on a visitor's visa or a work visa, and then they lost their job, for example, or they could be people who got into a little other trouble, you know, with keeping up with their visas, or it could be people who were caught at the border, you know, trying to cross the country, or people with green cards who ran into trouble, like the man in my first story.
So how many judges are there in New York City for these 70,000 cases?
Those 70,000 cases go to a number of courtrooms in the federal building on Foley Square. And there's 28 judges who hear cases there. 28, yeah. And they sit there listening to new cases, and there's about 20,000 new cases brought in each year. And they also have hearings that have been continuing on the older cases. You know, it's like any other courtroom. You get your new business, and then you get your old business that you're still dealing with because there's multiple hearings, you know, to go over. And they are hearing from, you know, people who are just like in any court, who are living at home and they come in for their court appearances. But then there's another immigration court on Varick Street, right across the street from WNYC. In fact, it's a federal office building that has Veterans Affairs and some other things. It used to be a detention center for immigrants, but it was deemed not appropriate. So immigrants who are in detention are in three detention centers in New Jersey and Orange County, New York. There's about 1,000 of them at any given time right now. And they are bussed in or brought in each day for their hearings at the Varick Street Court. So that court, by the way, has a backlog of about 550 cases or so right now. It's much, much smaller. I mean, the vast majority of immigrants are not in detention, but detention is for people who are generally, they may have criminal convictions, and these can be very minor. They could be misdemeanors. They could be much more serious, and they could also be people who were caught crossing the border. There's various ways you can end up in detention. It's not a good thing. It's like being in jail. When they come to court, they're in orange jumpsuits and they're shackled. So it's a very different system.
So with a backlog of 70,000 cases, mm-hmm. and 28 judges doing immigration cases in the city, how much actual time is a judge spending on each case?
God, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to add it all up. You know, when you first come in for your initial hearing, it's called a master calendar. And what happens is the judge is hearing 30, 35 new cases during the morning master calendar session. And you go in the waiting room and there's tons of people there with some of them have lawyers, some of them don't. If they have a lawyer, they are asked, you know, how are you going to plead? And the government is saying, we want to deport you. You know, there's a government prosecutor sitting on one side. The immigrant is on the other side with their lawyer. And then the judge says, okay, come back. The first available hearing date for you is August 2018, I heard in some cases.
Really?
Yeah. And if you don't have a lawyer, you say, I don't have a lawyer. And the judge says, okay, come back in a few months and hope you find a lawyer by then. And New York has a lot of immigration lawyers. The question is whether you can afford to pay for one. So there are some who are public lawyers, you know, public defenders, and then there are the private ones who can charge thousands and thousands of dollars. And so the day that I went and I watched one of these master calendars, the judge took about 5 minutes with each person. And these were immigrants from Albania, Russia, India, I think various places in Central America, China, Mexico, and she would say, okay, come back, Godspeed, come back. And, it took 5 minutes for each. And that's how she got through about 30 or 35 in one morning. And then later in the day, she had scheduled her longstanding cases, for their returning appearances.
And they come back?
Yeah, they come back. If they don't, I guess they can be brought to detention, if they think someone's a flight risk, which is how some people end up remaining in detention. Because if right now, you may have heard there was a U.S. Supreme Court hearing back in, I think it was around at the end of November, Brian, there was a U.S. Supreme Court hearing on how long immigrants in detention could remain there before they have a hearing to ask for, can I get out on bail? They were keeping people indefinitely. And a court in
So it's whether the constitutional right to a speedy trial.
Yes.
Puts a time limit on that immigration detention?
Right. And the Ninth Circuit Court in California found, this is, unconstitutional. You should get the right to go out on bail. You should get your hearing within 6 months max, which is what a court in New York already found. So in New York, nobody stays more than 6 months in detention unless, the judge says you're a flight risk, which happened to the Mexican guy in one of my stories. But the Supreme Court is hearing that case right now because the government appealed the decision in California saying, no, there should not be a time limit. These should take as, there's no reason to bring these people to court to ask for, to be out on bail. And so that is going through the Supreme Court right now. And if the Supreme Court says, no, there's no right to a speedy trial within 6 months or speedy hearing, bail hearing, I guess, within 6 months, then
even a bail hearing.
Yeah. Then here in New York, as in throughout the country, people can stay in detention indefinitely. But if the Supreme Court upholds the ruling in California, then there will be a 6 month limit, which is what we already have in New York.
Let's see if people have stories along these lines. Listeners, are you an immigrant whose case has gotten stuck in the bureaucratic sludge? Or anyone else with a relevant story to tell, 212-433-WNYC, or a question for our new courts reporter, WNYC veteran reporter Beth Fertig, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Here's one story. Beth spent a lot of time with Peter Bolanich. He emigrated from Poland when he was 5 and has lived in Yonkers ever since. But his case got stuck in this backlog of pending cases, even though he has a green card. Let's hear a bit from Peter.
I'm not a felon or nothing like that. I never got caught with firearms. I never assaulted anybody. At one point when I was a Teamster, I got involved with sniffing cocaine, and then I got hooked up with a couple girls, and it was hard to kick it.
So, Beth, tell us the story of Peter Bolanich.
So Peter, as you said, had been living here since he was 5 years old. He never bothered to apply for citizenship. And so unlike the rest of his family, when they emigrated over here legally, they were sponsored. And he's lived in Yonkers his whole life. He was a Teamster, as you heard him say. He got involved in drugs. He got a few arrests and convictions for possession of small amounts of crack cocaine. And he also worked as doing maintenance work in people's homes, plumbing, things like that. And then a few years ago, when he was arrested for possession of crack cocaine, he was in a jail in Yonkers, and we presume this is how it happened. When you're fingerprinted, when you're arrested, your fingerprints go to the state database, and then they go on to Homeland Security. So they figured out that he was a green card holder and that he had a conviction, and that makes him eligible for deportation. And I don't know why they had never taken action before, but at that point they decided that they were going to move to deport him. It could be because he was also arrested for heroin, which would be a little bit more serious, but I don't know why that wasn't that charge was dropped. But anyway, immigration agents came to his home one morning. They brought him to the federal building that I described. He could have been sent to detention because this was a criminal conviction. People with criminal convictions are usually sent to detention, but he has a really bad heart. And it's also been reported that the detention center in New Jersey has pretty poor healthcare conditions. So for whatever reason, he was not put in detention. And after about a year, he found himself a lawyer. And that lawyer is with Bronx Defenders, which is one of the public defender groups here in New York City. They are part of a special program called the New York Immigrant Family Unity Project, which gets city funds to represent mostly immigrants in detention because they have the hardest time finding lawyers. But they can also take a few extra cases. And so Peter lucked out by getting them. So he has free lawyers. And his case that they argued was basically if you send him back to Poland, he's going to be in jeopardy because he's got a bad heart and he won't get the health care he needs. He gets regular visits with a doctor. He's got a pacemaker. And there's an American citizen who depends on him. You can apply for this, you know, waiver from deportation, basically, if there's an American citizen who depends on you. In this case, it's his mom, who's 84, who he lives with, and he takes care of all of her medical needs. And so I was there in the court hearing when his lawyer presented, you know, stacks and stacks of paper showing, like, all these documents from family members, and he had gone to rehab for his drug and alcohol problems. He had stayed clean and sober. They had like 10 toxicology tests. Meanwhile, the government lawyer is arguing pretty half-heartedly, well, we believe he's a danger to society. And the judge just wasn't buying it and said, sir, you're free. I'm giving you a second chance. And he was just thrilled.
So at least that story has a happy ending. I was wondering how it turned out.
Yeah, yeah. Unlike the man from Mexico who is in my next story where we're still waiting to hear what's going to happen to him, but he entered the country illegally 12 years ago. He's in detention basically because of a bad subway ride. He was riding the Lexington Avenue line home to the Bronx after work. He works at a very popular restaurant in the West Village as a cook. And some woman on the train accused him of groping her. It was like one of those super crowded trains. And he says he didn't do it, and the charge was later dropped. But in the meantime, he got arrested. He was taken to Central Booking, where they fingerprint you. And he had tried to cross the border several times before he finally got in 2004 at the border in Arizona. So his fingerprints were on file. So when he went to a court hearing, even though New York City is a quote-unquote sanctuary city, they can't go, immigration agents can't go in the jails looking for people, still your fingerprints go on file, as I learned. And so that's probably, they wouldn't say, but that's probably how they found him. And they were waiting outside when he went to court downtown in Manhattan to plead not guilty to this groping charge, and they whisked him off to detention.
Huh.
And he's been there ever since. And he's got free lawyers because of this New York City program. New York is the only place in the country, or was the first, to offer free lawyers for immigrants in detention. And now other places are looking into it, San Francisco and Los Angeles notably. But he has help from a lawyer who's arguing now that he should be allowed to stay here, even though he entered the country illegally. First of all, President Obama has said people who have been here a long time who have clean records really shouldn't be priority, but that doesn't mean they can't be. You know, ICE is still moving to deport him. But they're arguing that he should be allowed to stay here because, again, American children, his American children are depending on him. There's an American citizen who needs him. And second, that he would be in danger if he were to move back to Mexico because he was severely abused. His name is Arturo, and you could hear his story, which aired today. He would be severely abused if he returned home because he was abused repeatedly by his stepfather, who has terrorized the whole family and has basically said, I'm going to kill you.
Wow. But I'm confused about something the implications of it from this case. No, I mean, what you said was very clear, but it confuses me about President Obama's policies.
Right.
Because what we usually hear about Obama is that he's mostly focused on deporting violent criminals.
Right.
And letting people who are otherwise law-abiding but here illegally remain. Arturo's story sounds like, since this groping charge was dropped, there's no criminal charge against him, that his only offense is sneaking into the country and staying in the country illegally, but ICE wants to take the time and resources of the federal government to deport him anyway.
Right, and at $130 a night in detention, where he's been for almost a year. So, you know, it raises questions.
So what is the Obama policy?
Well, the Obama policy, which he announced in his 2014 immigration reform speech, was basically we want to deport felons, not families, right? And he said we're going to go after, you know, people with criminal records. But criminal record, as we learned with Peter Bolanich, can be somebody with a misdemeanor. Also, it doesn't restrict ICE. They can still go after anybody they want. So now, as he fights to remain in the country, Arturo does happen to have a few criminal convictions for misdemeanor, like trespassing in a park after dark, smoking marijuana. But that's not why they're seeking to deport him. They're only seeking to deport him because he entered the country illegally.
WNYC's Beth Fertig, now our courts reporter, and her first few reports, maybe you've been hearing them this week, on her new beat on the immigration courts. And Megan in Hallidon, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. I'm an immigration lawyer, and I've been practicing immigration law for more than 20 years in New Jersey, primarily in the Newark Immigration Courthouse. And I just had to call in because I was in immigration court last week, and the judge was out sick. And our new court date is for January 31st, 2018. And mm-hmm. I wish I could say that that's uncommon or that people were shocked, but
so you are living and breathing evidence of the premise of Beth's report, which
yes.
is that the backlog in immigration court is unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. My oldest court case right now in my office pending started in immigration court in 2008, and it is still not resolved. We're not even on appeal. We haven't had a final hearing in that case yet for almost 10 years. It's been transferred to different judges. Every time a judge retires or something, it's another year for another court date. The 2008 case is definitely an outlier, but it's not that outlying. Mm-hmm.
So Megan, for you as an immigration lawyer and with stories like this, what are you anticipating after Trump takes office?
That's the $1,000 question that I get asked by my clients every single day. I anticipate the backlog getting worse, not just in court proceedings, but also in the processing of just regular applications. I mean, most people get immigration benefits without having to go to immigration court, just by mailing in applications and going for an interview. And I expect both to get considerably worse because, one, I think he's not going to put any additional resources that are needed. I think there's going to be a kind of a prejudice. What they do now is, especially in the application processing, is that they will take people from processing one type of application and move them to others that they consider more higher priority. So I imagine they will be taking people off of, say, green card applications or naturalization applications and moving them into more deportation-related processes, which would backlog everything else.
So it would wind up having this, if that happens, it would wind up having the secondary effect, Beth, of not just kicking out more immigrants, but slowing up the green card applications for people who are here legitimately.
I just want to echo something Megan said, because you're not alone. I heard it from another immigration lawyer in the federal building when they were waiting for those, you know, massive cases. He told me that he has clients who have taken, you know, 8 or 10 years perhaps. And he said the only way that Trump could move more people through the system is if he did away with due process. And I also want to say that there's another reason that the court system is so backlogged, and it's because of the surge. Remember a few years ago, there were a lot of migrants coming from Central America. Well, the Obama administration sort of put those at the front end of the burner, even though a lot of those people didn't have lawyers, and that ended up pushing a lot of existing cases to the back of the line. And immigration judges and lawyers are very upset about that.
Megan, thank you. Good luck out there. And Eric in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Eric.
Hi. So this has to do with the due process. And I'd like to know, we've seen Guantanamo Bay, what legally requires there to be due process for a non-U.S. citizen, since the Trump administration is doing things very differently? And like was mentioned, is there any legal standing that requires us to do due process? And if we get rid of it, won't that essentially push his agenda forward?
Well, I would say it has to do with the Constitution and Congress. And I'm not a constitutional lawyer. I'm not even a lawyer. I'm new to this. But from what I understand, Congress writes the immigration laws. So they could, you know, change the way that somebody could be allowed to stay, for example. But there are certain constitutional protections. You know, this is civil court, basically, when you go to immigration court. I don't think they could do away with due process completely.
So even for non-U.S. citizens, and that would be something for us to follow up on
yeah.
in the future.
Yeah, because,
you know, the Tuesday night series that we're about to launch that I'll be hosting beginning next Tuesday night at 8 o'clock is all going to be about changing norms in this country, or the pressure mm-hmm. for norms to change during the first 100 days of the Trump administration. And I wonder if one of those norms might be how much due process people who are not Americans, whether they're, you know, undocumented immigrants, or whether this has to do with Islam and people from, you know, parts of the world that are considered at risk for terrorism, and the policies that may come in relevant to that. How much due process for non-U.S. persons is going to be questioned?
And that's why cities are looking at what New York has, this free program for lawyers to represent immigrants in detention, because they're wondering the same thing too. And, you know, you might wonder, is this a good use of taxpayer dollars to give people accused of breaking immigration laws free lawyers? But I spoke to George W. Bush's former director of ICE, of Customs Enforcement, and she said, you know, they actually need lawyers to get them through the system, just to understand how it works. You don't want to go after a person who has no representation, because it just slows everything down and it's not fair. And also, when they get a lawyer, they may learn that they really don't have any grounds to stay here and not bother fighting it. So, you know, because of this project in New York, more immigrants are getting representation and more are winning their cases. It went from 3% before to about 30% now of the people in detention. But that's still not a lot. There's going to be a lot of people who won't get to stay. But the fact that they have a lawyer ensures the due process, which is what a lot of people are concerned about.
Joel in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joel.
Hey, how are you? Love the show.
Thank you.
I'm actually calling in regard because my dad actually just went through this. Long story short, he was here for over 20 years, making a very good living, six figures. But when he was in his early 20s, and I also have to add that he came here as an immigrant with my mom, never became a citizen, though. But when he was in his early 20s here, he did something. To this day, he still hasn't told me exactly what it was. I'm thinking it was either had to do with guns or drugs. But he was arrested. He was supposed to be deported, and he wasn't. After 9/11 happened, he got caught speeding, and this is out in Massachusetts. They ran his license, and they saw that he was supposed to be deported. So I guess all the agencies pulled their information together. They put him in jail. He was there about 3 years before they actually deported him. We were going back and forth to court. We had lawyers for him. I just think it was ridiculous for him to be in there for that many years. You know, if you're going to deport someone, do it. And, you know, instead of having them there for 3 years. And this was in Jersey, by the way. He was living in Massachusetts, but they sent him to Jersey. That's where he stayed in jail for about 3 years.
Wow. And that's because of the backlog primarily?
Did
he have a lawyer?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, so there's a lot of hearings. You know, due process takes a long time. And there was the backlog, I'm sure. And, yeah, he wasn't able to get out on bail from the detention center either.
No, we were going for that. That was not happening. It was hard just getting court dates, period.
Yeah.
Were you born and raised here?
No, I was not born here. I was raised here, though. And I'm a citizen now through my mom.
How does it feel to see your father get deported?
It sucks. You know, you don't get to see him. I haven't seen him in a few years now. He's actually out in Spain now. So, yeah, I would have to go out there to go and see him. But, yeah, no, it totally sucks. You know, if they would have deported him a lot faster, obviously that would have been better because, again, the guy had a life here. He had a house, all of that. And all of that was lost throughout the years because he wasn't able to maintain it on his own. So,
Joel, I'm sorry for your pain. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Wow. So that's some story, and we're about out of time, Beth, but somebody who obviously didn't want to see his father deported at all but said, given the alternatives, he would have been deported faster than go through this backlog with the subsequent effect it had on family finances and things like that,
yeah.
If I understand him correctly.
Yeah, it takes a large, large toll on people.
So what's your next story?
I don't know.
People,
got any ideas for me?
We can talk about it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
But in the meantime, you can people you can hear Beth's reports on the immigration courts on our website at wnyc.org. Right?
And you can follow me on Twitter at Beth Fertig.
Thanks, Beth.
Thank you,
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Michael Eric Dyson next. Stay with us.